Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Travel Department. Discover hundreds of unforgettable destinations with expert local guides.
Two of the original members of legendary band Horselips are with me now in our studio, Jim Lockhart and Eamon Carr. Great to see you both. Good morning.
Hey, Miriam. Good morning.
Hey, I'm just thinking you both look so healthy. Now you're celebrating the release of a box set called Horselips at the BBC. Going back to the early days in the 1970s and more recent gigs and TV docs with the BBC and the Ulster Orchestra. Are you both as well as you look?
He's good.
The latest from the medical bulletins from the three teams of medics that are working on us say that we're okay to go.
Yeah, no, you look great. Listen, Jim, quick reminder of how you got together as a band, because there was an ad being made and they needed a band. Wasn't that it?
Yeah, Eamon and Barry were working in Arcs Advertising at the bottom of Harcourt Street with Charles O'Connor, who had come over from Middlesbrough. And he was in the art department, and they needed to put a band together, and they were short a keyboard player. So Devlin said, I know a guy who plays keyboards, and they said, how soon could you get him? And he said, I don't know, give me 20 minutes. And he ran out into Stephen's Green, where I was dawdling up to a lecture in Earlsford Terrace in UCD, where the NCAA concert hall is now. And sure enough, there I was halfway through the green thinking, would I actually get to the lecture or not? And Devlin says...
As in Barry Devlin says,
you play organ, don't you? I said, no, never played organ. I said, tell them you can play organ. There's a gig up here. I said, but I've got a lecture. Never mind. And so they said, you play organ? I said, yeah, played church organ for 10 years. Great. Okay. You've got a gig. Come on in. So we did that. And then we had all been kind of mucking around with various kinds of musical escapades in one way or another for a couple of years before that. And we just talking, it seemed like we were on the same page in a lot of ways. And we had such fun together that we thought it would be an awful shame to let this opportunity pass. And so we started mucking around with a bit of rock and roll. And by chance, we were also all vaguely into different kinds of traditional and folky stuff. And so we started to do that as well. And then bit by bit, the two coalesced.
And it was totally opportunistic, because in actual fact, we had heard, Barry and I had heard, that down in the basement we were shooting a commercial, but they couldn't find a band, and they had been auditioning. Yeah. Beat groups from around town, and they all looked tired, hungover, spotty. And so Barry said to me, you know, you play something. And I said, yeah. And Charles, of course, is down. So we roped in Charles. So we formed the band on a corridor, and then we went down and knocked on the door and said, by the way, you know, we're a band. And they said, oh, you look okay. In other words, you know, you don't look hungover, and you look clean. And we got the gig.
And the thing is, Eamon, the look was really key. You were all really good looking guys, still are, but it was the hair and the moustaches and the clothes. Like, who called the shots on that? How did that develop?
I think it was automatic, wasn't it? I think everybody had just grown their hair. You know, I mean, it was what? Late 70s, actually. Yeah, 1970. And so everybody had just grown their hair. But at a certain point, Barry decided that we needed to up the game. And so he said, look, you know, we've seen David Bowie and Mark Bolan and so on TV. And so we're going to have to try and do something. And so off he went and got a big pile of, curtain material, essentially. And we lived with a woman called Jackie McNeil,
yeah,
who was a seamstress. Okay. And she ran up a bunch of suits and jackets and mad stuff. And then and that was it. There was no turning back after that.
You looked fab. And there was a confidence about you all, though, wasn't there, Jim? You were doing something new. You weren't going to stick to the rules of old Ireland, really.
That kind of, that clothes thing. And like, we got a lot of slagging for playing jigs and reels while going around in like Lurex platform shoes and curtain material and assorted crimes against fashion. But that was all, I mean, like at the time, folk music until Sean O'Riordan in 1960 revolutionised everything. He made everything possible that came after, including Riverdance and everything. So until then, folk music had been like, by the shot to the Rosses, you know, excuse me, no, go home. And there'd been a lot of apology, you know, people really felt that Irish stuff like that was not great, you know. And O'Riordan allowed us to have some respect for that. And so, but there was still a lot of post-colonial stuff about, and our embrace of just natty gear was a bit of us saying, you know, we're perfectly, you know, there's nothing to apologise for here. And it was great fun to stick the two together.
But it wasn't just in Ireland, because when we went to London and we played at the Royal Albert Hall, and reviewers were there and the, you know, audience and so on. So people, maybe half of the audience, were expecting an Irish folk group. Yeah. And we had been used to playing in the ballrooms. And so we were very loud. And one of the reviewers said, not since Jimi Hendrix had my ears been damaged by such loud music in the Royal Albert Hall. And it was the best review we ever had. It was fantastic. We were linked in with Jimi Hendrix.
That had a second incarnation, because remember you wrote a press release.
Oh, stop. Sorry. I wrote a press release in the back of a taxi on the way to
years
to
later
or somewhere. And so I said, as the reviewer said, not since Jimi Hendrix, blah, blah, blah. You know, -C review. But of course, the secretary who in the office typed it up as not since Jimi Hendrix, blah, blah, blah. And of course, it went out and it appeared in a number of provincial Irish newspapers. Not since Jimi Hendrix, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. But look, your second album was The Thorn and the incredible Jarrig Doom from that. Look, we're going to take a blast of it first and then talk about Johnny Feehan and how great a guitarist he was. Still so brilliant. I mean, Johnny, I know he's the only one of you who's no longer here. He's in heaven, hopefully listening now. He took an array of the tune, didn't he, Jim? And he turned it into that riff. He was incredibly special, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was completely, there was no, the idea just went straight from his soul into the strings. When he played that riff first, like that, in the front room in James Street, where we were rehearsing, we were mucking around, and we'd been playing with O'Neill's Cavalry, Mark Louis Nail, for a while, because it's an unusual tune as an Irish tune. It doesn't sort of fit in with the normal. It doesn't have the normal form. It's a really intriguing shape, and it's a really intriguing set, just the way it runs. And it wasn't quite fitting into place. We couldn't make it do what we were trying. We weren't sure what we were trying to do with it. And Johnny suddenly, out of the blue, played it exactly like that first time round. And he did the same with Trouble later. He just sort of, the riff came forth fully formed. It was beautiful. And it's like, what he does is, it's a small change, but it's the combination of that Les Paul tone and the little anticipation which really changed the character of the sound and changed it from a traditional tune into a rock and roll riff, you know.
And since you mentioned Trouble with a capital T, listen, let's take a blast of it, will we? Still so good. Did you know Eamon at the time, how good it was and how good the whole album was going to be?
Yeah, well, with Johnny steering things, you just knew you couldn't go wrong. Johnny had an encyclopedic knowledge of the blues, astonishing, both rural blues and electric blues. And he also had an incredible repertoire of traditional Irish music. And he was able to meld the two together because he had toured with Ted Fury, the father of the Fury brothers, all up and down the pubs of Clare, learning his tunes. And, you know, he could turn in sixpence. It was quite astonishing. But with Trouble, when we were trying to pin down, see, we're telling the story of the Book of Invasions, allegedly. And it was Pete St. John who said it to me years later. He said, who feels about and write Pete St. John? He said, Carr, he says, you know how to write a song. He said, you write the verses for the band, for the musos, and you write the chorus for the punter. And essentially you put information into the verse and a catchy chorus.
But of course you're also talented because, Jim, you were the flute riff there, weren't you?
Yeah, but I was copying Johnny's guitar riff, but it was the combination of the flute and guitar that gave it its character, but it was Johnny's riff.
And of course, Larry Mullen, didn't he take an Aramtha for Italia 1990, cementing its status? What did you both think of its version?
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Genius move.
Yeah. Now, this BBC collection, what was your involvement? Tell me about it.
There was a load of stuff in the BBC archives, some of which we hadn't heard, some of which wasn't even in the archives, but had to be kind of collated from people who had recorded stuff off air. So there's a couple of John Peel sessions from the 70s. There's two in concerts, one from early 70s, one from later 70s. There's some BBC TV stuff. And it's a great kind of overview. There's like, I think this has got three CDs and a DVD or something.
A bunch of stuff.
Yeah, a bunch of stuff. And then there's the usual like booklet and in detailed sleeve notes and all that kind of thing. It's great fun.
But sort of weirdly, you know, I mean, as a fan, as a music fan, I would have bought the Beatles at the BBC and Fleetwood Mac at the BBC and the Cream at the BBC. Mm. And then suddenly there's a Horsips at the BBC, sort of like completing the set. You know, it's great.
So well deserved. But I was watching you two even there when some of the songs were playing there. What's it like going back to the archives? Is it emotional when you look back and remember those great times or not?
Yeah, it is. And what's extraordinary is when we were doing remastering, for example, and you listen to stuff on headphones or on, you know, good studio monitors, and you hear detail that you had forgotten was there, which is really a joy to hear. I remember thinking, wow, that was pretty good. I didn't realise we had done that. So you give yourself a little pats on the back. Yeah, nice.
You got an opportunity to overdub and put in harmonies and stuff that you wouldn't necessarily use live, wouldn't be able to fit in live. And to hear that sort of detail in the tracks is astonishing. Mm. And sometimes even hearing a live track that you hadn't heard for years, the excitement of the live track and the audience reaction. Yeah. Wonderful.
And one of the things you were talking about, Johnny and Johnny's guitar, but what isn't talked about so much is his lovely vocals. He was such a gorgeous singer, and he was an amazing session player. He played everything perfectly first time and repeated it first time. Well, we all tried to sort of get our bits together and made our bits of mistakes, but Johnny would do it perfectly all the time. But his vocals, his soulful vocals were kind of overshadowed by his guitar playing. He was a lovely singer.
The lovely thing is you've all stayed quite close. I know you and Barry Devlin, who's away, so he couldn't be here today, unfortunately, but you've stayed besties, haven't you? You're all close, though.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all neighbours.
We're pretty much neighbours, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you both stayed in the communications world. You, Eamon, as a music and sports writer. Jim, a radio producer here in RT. How much does your time in Horsips, do you think, though, still define you both? How much of your identity comes from being in that band?
Well, I mean, you know, by and large, when you know, you bump into people walking across the road in Red Mines the other day, and a fella walking along beside me said, Horsips. And I said, yeah. And he said, yeah, brilliant. He said, blah, 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 blah. And I said, I'm meeting Jim Locker tomorrow. And I mentioned it to you, you know. And so, and he said, I'm not going to hassle you. And he headed off towards the post office, and I went over towards Tesco.
As you do.
Yeah.
You know, but it's great. Wonderful. You get stuck into music in one sense, and it's... like the variety of music that you can be involved in is glorious. I'm singing with a choir at the moment in Ranelagh. We're doing a concert next Saturday, doing a Mozart mass. So going from rock and roll through here to, you know, it's a delightful kind of continuum.
Where is that Mozart mass on?
It's in Sanford Church in Ranelagh.
Where? So you both enjoy it so much.
No Mozart for me. It's all guru weird brain where I come from.
Well, look, Jim Lockhart and Eamon Carr, thank you both for coming in this morning. It's so always a joy to chat to you both. You always come in so happy. Like, you love life.
You have to.
Yeah. But you do.
There's a lot to be happy about.
Yeah. Despite what's going on around us. Yeah. I mean, goodness. But however.
Yeah. But look, Horsips at the BBC. is available now from Celtic Note and other music stores. And Eamon, your new book, Pure Gold, Memorable Conversations with Remarkable People, published by Merriam Press, is out this week. Thank you both very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.